Alright, time for another Google is Evil video presentation. Something like that, anyway. Alright, the weekly thing. Yeah, so we've been weekly lately. Working on it, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, it's, who am I talking to and how much are they listening? So, that's always got to be part of the context here. So anyway, there is a channel, Eigenzellganger, I guess, is the name. Something like that. In Search Of, I guess that's a Danish or some kind of word for In Search Of. So, it has lots of views, okay? So, I mean, it's 479 views for the harder you try, the worse it gets. Okay, interesting. But anyway, it has some anti-natalist themed videos that do get a lot of views, so that's a good thing. I probably should look at the comments on some of those videos and see if we can glean some arguments somewhere. But it's basically a mixture of these Buddhist kind of themes with kind of nihilism, So I did want to talk about nihilism, this whole attitude that somehow you can change the facts of life and somehow make value go away, that even though you personally experience what I would describe as a cavern of difference between your best feeling and your worst feeling, that somehow you can believe it doesn't matter how much bad feelings you do versus good feeling you do, when, to me it's undeniable. I mean, as true as water is wet is the difference between feeling good and feeling bad. I mean, one of them is appropriately labeled bad, and the other is appropriately labeled good, and there's just no way of changing that. So more videos are popping up. Okay. So, 2 million views for this stoicism one. So there's a whole bunch of stoic stuff, a whole bunch of how not to give a shit. Which, I obviously find kind of repugnant, as a way of getting through your life because of, partly because of this whole idea of nihilism. Part of nihilism has to do with people who disconnect themselves from the fate of other people and the future, you could argue, the state of the animal condition on Earth. Somehow isn't relevant to their personal existence. And to me, it's the entire purpose of me making videos on the subject is kind of the fact that I'm personally invested in that future because I know it's not about, the ride, the horse. It's about the ride, okay? That consciousness, mine, isn't really mine. It's just an event in the universe. I'm not unique to, I'm not unique in any way that matters, okay? The fact that I speak a certain way or think a certain way and I use a certain jargon and I have certain sensibilities isn't really important. The important is that there is something with sensibilities. There is something thinking. There is something feeling. There is something reacting. There is something, engaged. So this idea that it only matters, like say if you were a black cat and you kind of thought that, only black cats matter and all the other cats don't matter because they're ugly and stupid and all these other ridicules you can come up with, it's really kind of retarded to say that because, the inside of the cat is the same, okay? It's same cats. It's this kind of an ugly tendency of human beings to be nepotist and nationalist and racist and all these negativistist things. And, we have to use our brain to recognize now and then that, it's really retarded because the brain is doing the same thing my brain is doing, and it got here the same way my brain got here. And I might as well concede that it doesn't make any difference whether I have a headache or they have a headache. Okay, the headache is the enemy. The broken leg is the enemy. The, having a piece of a building fall on you as you're walking down the sidewalk, that's the enemy. it doesn't matter who it falls on. It matters that somebody's going to be ruined because of it and go through horrible processes and have very unpleasant experiences. And that's all that I'm doing. I'm just protecting one single body. You know, my brain is protecting my brain because it knows my brain is doing all of this feeling thing. So it knows it really only cares about the feeling part. But it is protecting it. It is strategizing. It is constantly aware of the difference between feeling good and feeling bad and doing everything it can to prevent the bad stuff and cause the good stuff. And it would be just idiotic for me not to recognize that that same motivation should exist for any other sentient brain I run across. That every single one of the sentient brains has the same interest and the same interest and the same value. I can't really say I am more important and then how I feel is more important. It's not rational. It's not reasonable. Well, anyway, so that, to me, in my opinion, just defeats any kind of nihilistic, idiotic notions. I'm personally experiencing consciousness. I know the difference between feeling good and feeling bad. And I know there's no good reason to believe that any other brain feeling good or feeling bad is doing anything different than what mine is doing, and that the bad is the feeling. It's not, doesn't matter who it's in. Okay, it just doesn't. As much as we'd like it to matter, it's like as much as it would be easier to live if we could discount it, you can't do that, you know, rationally. So maybe we'll just play. I haven't researched any of these videos. I'm just, you know, like I said, I was just surprised by the view numbers. And, you know, it's good. I mean, there's somebody making, you know, life negative, you could argue, videos that has a high view count. So that's good. But I don't know exactly what's in the philosophy, so we'll just play one of this. This one's only 5 minutes, and you know, there'll be plenty for me to argue in all of these videos, no doubt. So we'll just play some of it and see where it goes. I think that'll be a plan. And such. So the commercials, you know, just part of the facts of life here on the internet. Everything's got to be monetized, blah, 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 blah. Yuck. Get to it already, thank you.
Right. Emperor Marcus Aurelius was the most powerful man on Earth.
Okay, so I don't know if we really want the closed captions. Probably it would be helpful because it's a little bit of an accent. All right, so we're doing into ancient history. Who really cares? I really don't, but okay, I'll probably need to turn this volume down a little. And all right, that should be good enough.
He commanded an army that was feared in all corners of the known world. And if he wanted, he could have sex with any woman he desires and be drunk and partying for the rest of his life.
It's okay, so whatever. So I don't know. I don't know if that even worked on me when I was 13, that somebody could just draw a cartoon and I'd believe it. Okay. You know, in the sense that I would argue that, well, his life was probably more complicated than that. Yeah, probably.
Quite difficult to imagine absolute power. Many powerful people in the past and the present cannot handle power. David?
Well, the problem isn't them handling it. That's the whole thing, right? Is that they handle it really easy. They don't take any... You know, it doesn't get to them. It doesn't bother them that, you know, what they're deciding really is going to be, you know, gigantic in terms of the stakes. I mean, you know, hundreds, thousands, perhaps millions of lives will be completely changed, and, you know, the course of events will be, you know, radically changed. And, you know, that's a, in my opinion, that would be a huge responsibility. It's like driving a train with a million people on it. You know, you really don't want to make any stupid mistakes like, oh, I just didn't notice the red flashing button because I was distracted, you know, looking at the girl on the, yeah, blah, 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 yeah, whatever. No, you don't want to be caught doing that.
Become corrupt, slaves of their greed and hunger for more. But Mark,
well, that's how they gain power, is because they're hungry for it, okay? But they don't recognize, they don't want the power to make the world a better place. They just want the power for the personal, you know, makes their wiener harder, you know, kind of thing, the ego points.
Marcus Aurelius was different. He was the emperor of Rome and very conscious of the fact that momentary pleasure was available to him without limits. As opposed to his son Commodus, he turned away from orgies, excessive use of alcohol, and the sadistic sex scenes in the Colosseum where the Roman elite went for entertainment.
Right, good. So he protested some of the common debauchery that's part of life. Okay, fine.
He wrote about his determination and struggle with himself in his memoirs that were never meant to be published, called Meditations.
Really good, you know. So it's a good practice to have as a human being, probably, is to make some record of, oh, you know, I tried to fool the aliens today by, you know, blah, 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 you know. So, yes, I mean, we all have to kind of live a life, you know, you have to hide anything that's, you know, important, because people will distort it and pervert it. So you can't, you know, you can't really be, you know, 100% honest, I guess, because somebody will take advantage of that. And that'll be a weakness, not a strength. Honesty is not your best policy if you want to win in politics.
Meditations became a key work of a more than 2,000 years old philosophical school called Stoicism.
Right, and you know, it's you know, whether it's 2,000 year old or not, the fact is the word does have some really negative connotations of being just cruel, frankly. Stoic just means, yeah, okay, you survive events that really factually people probably shouldn't survive. Because that's why we survive as a parasite, is because we can take anything, and taking anything isn't a good thing. Letting things get as bad can be isn't a positive quality, okay? Makes us a menace, frankly. All right, so, you know, 2 million views, just, you know, so far, you know, not shockingly, but whatever. The power of indifference, you know, no, sorry. It's just such a bad combination of words.
The Stoics observed that from the human perspective,
we know that they weren't indifferent, because then they wouldn't have been powerful, they wouldn't have been winners, they wouldn't have gotten strong, they wouldn't have gotten any of this. So it's not about indifference, it's about personalizing. It's about really making your objectives really narrow, okay, really focused on something very specific and tangible, and ignoring big picture. So just focus on the little picture, conquer your little picture, you know, conquer the little things in the way, and don't get distracted by the forest of trees you have to cut. You know, like if you want to cut the most trees, it's like daunting if somebody says, well, go cut 1 million trees. But if you take it one tree at a time, okay, you get to 1 million and you didn't know you even got there. But if you're thinking about how big the task is, then you get discouraged and you lose your mojo.
Two categories can be distinguished: things that we do not control and things that we do control.
So the categories are, yeah, and you're supposed to have the wisdom to tell the difference. Well, guess what? There's no such wisdom. You have absolutely no way of knowing what you actually have the power to control. You just don't know. I could possibly be president. Okay, maybe I should run for president because maybe I can win. Who knows? Maybe some bizarre event happens and I win. Like the aliens make a deal with me, you know. So if you elect me president, you can have the alien deal. But if you don't, you don't get the alien deal, you know, the new technology or something. We just don't know what's in our control. We don't know how much we could do in the world. We don't know. It just can't be known. We don't have any way to run the model of all the different ways I could react and interact in the world and have a decisively powerful or weak influence in terms of changing things for the better or changing things for the worse. We just don't know. So it's kind of just, you know, it's sort of baby talk. It's a big philosophical concept, but it's just useless because you have no way of knowing what you can control.
The Stoic philosopher Epictetus starts his work, The Enchiridion, with the fundamental tenet of Stoicism, which is that most things are simply not up to us.
So again, that's just a statement. You have no idea what the possibilities are. The person who becomes king didn't have any assurance he was going to be king. Well, in the past he did. But I just mean that all people who start their life, there's no immediate knowledge of any potentialities. Okay, the winners seem to win without trying, and the losers seem to lose without it being their fault, kind of thing, you can argue. There's certain tendencies, but so this is a guy giving suggestions who's using a crutch, just for funny joke. Kind of funny.
Think about exterior things like our friends, our colleagues, our intimate partners, the economy, the number.
Right, if you think about any of these things, though, it's all crass and kind of disgusting. Our partners, kind of slimy deal making, I want certain things, I want you to hit certain buttons on me, everything is just kind of tacky.
Number of likes on Facebook, things that politicians say, or the deterioration of our bodies. Yes, we can influence these matters, but even if we do everything right, economy can still collapse. Our money can be taken from us, and our intimate partners can cheat or die. At the end of the day, there's nothing we can do to exclude misfortune.
All right, so yeah, some bad luck, it's just really bad luck, like the world could blow up, and so, you invested in having a higher education and becoming a surgeon, and then the world blows up, and you did, oh shit, I did all that work for nothing. Because that knowledge can't be applied in a world that blew up. We can make future investments that won't pay off because of some change in the way what happens to the world and our predictions were inaccurate. We thought there'd be a whole bunch of jobs in the future and there's no jobs doing that in the future because everybody thought the same thing and everybody got the same education I got and everybody did what I did. So none of us are employable. You can make miscalculations and all kinds of stuff, but again, misfortune, this is the, kind of a tricky word because, it's about luck, but it's about recognizing probabilities and possibilities too. So, I would clearly argue that people attempting to be sports heroes, are asking for failure. Because that's the statistical odds. You're not going to be a professional basketball player, and you're not going to win, and you're not going to get there. And there's lots of things that are going to lead to your failure. So there's so much opportunity, risk of failure versus the tiny, likelihood of success that, in a sense, you were inviting the failure. Okay, so you do have to measure the what dice you roll. Okay, I mean, some of the dice you can sort of get an idea what's on them. Okay, we can't get a precise, can't see all the sides of all the dice, but we can get some sense. And some of these dice you can already see they have skull and crossbones on them and they got really small numbers and you're not going to get your, you need to roll 32. And there's just, those dice just aren't likely to add up to 32. All right, but it could be that all the sides you don't see have sixes on them, and maybe even one of the dice has a 32 on it, and you could be lucky and get that dice to hit 32. But I'm just saying that realistically, we can know things probabilistically and statistically, and you got to make decisions, within that limited amount of information. But it's always a limited amount of information, so. Every decision is, that's my best guess. You can't do better than, it's my best guess at the right choice. But maybe you're giving something away. Maybe you should have gone for the gold medal. Because you would have won it. But then you would have ruined somebody else's life by winning it. So even that's tainted. because you have to demonstrate that, I really needed it more than him. Did you really need it more than him? Maybe the other guy would have been, his life would have been so much better if he won the gold medal. and you're going to win it, and you're just going to be an alcoholic and a, you know, resentful putz. So you'll fuck up winning the gold medal. He'll do it better than you. So maybe he should win it anyway, even if you are better, because the outcome will be better.
This sounds depressing and pessimistic, but...
What I'm saying is depressing and pessimistic. Okay, what you're saying is almost like, oh, okay, there's... No. None of these decisions are even makeable. Like, they're just so frustrating and irritating and harsh to even have to spend time calculating. How many Chinese people did I ruin today by, you know, not participating in the economy properly or something? It's terrible. Yeah, I mean, you have to calculate every move you make, everything you say to another human being. Everything has blow-up potential. Everything has bomb potential. That, you know, you'll have a fight with your friend and then he'll go beat up his wife because you pissed him off. You know, that kind of shit. It's just so fucking messy, this living thing. Eugh.
Don't worry, there are still aspects of our life that are up to us. According to Epictetus, these...
Yeah, so whatever. I mean, you know, up to us to interact in it in ways we can't possibly know, whether, you know, you go pet the kitty and the kitty feels all good and then it's not paying attention when it crosses the street and it gets run over. I mean, you know, the road to hell is paved in good intentions and even good acts. You do the right thing, and unfortunately, it wasn't the right thing this time because the dice rolled a certain different way. And because you didn't anticipate that interference, okay, you made a mess. And you didn't, were trying to make a mess. I mean, again, you fall in love with a girl, okay? Well, if you didn't fall in love with her, and you didn't seduce her, and you didn't go to the trouble of trying to make her love you and all this kind of crap, she would have married somebody else, and it might have just prevented him from being a serial killer. Who the fuck knows? So I'm just saying, the whole thing is so messy, you know, and doing this, pretending you can do some sort of clinical thinking that exempts you from problems, you know, you can't exempt yourself from the burden. Did I do the right thing? Even though it looks like it's all turning out perfect, you know, there's that catch somewhere in there. That catch where, you know, it turns out we put people in prison for running over a pedestrian, but he ran over a serial killer and saved society so much trouble. You know, and we have him in prison. You know, it's stupid outcomes.
Aspects are our opinions, our own actions, or, in other words, the position we take towards the world around us.
Right. So the position has to be to try to do the right thing. So all we can do is accept that it's all probabilistic and try to make the right probabilistic choice. So you just try to find a good game to bet in, you know, where you have some chance that it's a likelihoods. You can have some, you know, assurances that you're making good choices. So you just try to evade, you know, the pick six lottery, and you try something a little more in the realm of possible application of a possible strategy. You know, one in a million versus one in 10 million, or more than one in a billion. Try to narrow your improbabilities.
According to Epictetus, we should focus on the things within our control and have a contempt for the things not in our control.
Well, whatever that even could mean. Obviously, there's just no way of knowing what you have control over. So there's no point in reducing your ambitions because then you won't do any of the stuff you need to do, somebody needs to do, to be a great leader or to be the right guy at the right time to save the day. You can't say, you know, you can't be Superman unless you, you know, play with the kryptonite. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, you do have to do the, you know, whatever the, you have to do your, you have to eat your spinach or whatever the job is. You know, you have to do the investing in that outcome, and if nobody invests in being great, okay, then there won't be any great people to save the day.
Someone who is severely ill doesn't have control over his or her disease. We can mitigate the symptoms or use healing techniques, hoping that the patient recovers. But the results are not up to us. Nevertheless, this...
So I don't even know what that means. Of course, they sometimes are up to us entirely, and we give blood, and, you know, it saves somebody's life or some kind of crap like that. So, I don't know. More bullshit.
This person can decide which position he or she takes in regards to the situation. When the sickness is fully accepted...
The point is that we have just a reactive brain. And the point is that we know that getting hysterical, like crying, that's not going to help. Okay, I mean, wetting your pants and, you know, blah, 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 pooping your pants, throwing up, doing all that. No, none of this stuff will help. So getting all upset, you know, and all hysterical, well, that's not going to make you very effective in helping to mitigate a problem. So trying to control your emotional reactions is a good idea, having your brain having some practice, you know, that works. Now, I'm the last person on earth to try to explain how you do that to somebody, because I have failed to find those control mechanisms. And I'm really triggerable, okay? And I'm triggerable even by just words that run through my head. A word will fly into my head and, oh, shit, I can feel my whole mood, you know, tanking. And I have to do all this work to reconstruct myself out of that negative thought. And all of that is, so fine. If somebody's got lessons to teach that, fine. I'm just saying, I personally haven't been able to find any mechanisms to fix those kind of triggers. And I often use the example of vertigo, okay? So anybody who's ever had vertigo, it's just this weird idea that your brain is just reacting to images. I mean, you don't have to actually be on a bridge and looking over the bridge. All you have to do is see a picture of looking over a bridge. And your brain somehow does this fucktarded reaction that causes you to faint, you know, or something. I mean, you know, it's so subtle, and the trigger is so mysteriously hidden inside of some subconscious bullshit, some conditioned bullshit reaction. And so many of our emotions are triggered that way. You know, so many of our feelings and our mood is triggered by these mechanisms that we can't see. We can't see how it did that, how it turned as this benign picture of distance falling into, you know, whoa, I'm going to fall, you know, my physiology is getting out of balance, and, you know, the pressure in my ears is fucked up and everything, you know, and you're going to fall down. I mean, you know, it is, that's unfortunate that it's not just thought over matter, you know, that we just say to ourselves, I am stoic, and you're stoic. No, you can't just think your way out of it. Some of it is physiological, and your body is reacting. Your brain is triggering hormonal changes and, you know, glandular bullshit, and that crap is fucking you up. But all we are is reactions. And all I'm arguing for is, I can't really argue about controlling your physiology, because I can't do it. But I do understand the idea of concepts and words and connecting them. And so what you can control is your reactions. And you can say, okay, I know what, you know, I know how futile anger is, and I know how futile different things are. So I will attempt, where possible, to mitigate any getting caught in a, you know, they threw a rock, now I'll throw a rock, and then they'll throw a rock, and then I'll, you know, I can try to mitigate against getting into that kind of crap. You know, but yes, I put all this sort of in the psychobabble category. It's definitely good if you can control, if you have disciplines that inform you that your body isn't very smart, your emotions aren't very smart, and you shouldn't let them do this reacting thing, okay, without tempering them with a constant supply of, oh, just laugh that off, forget it. You're only going to accelerate the problem. You're going to make the problem worse by reacting poorly. So don't react quickly, and always react, you know, giving it, you know, letting it go through your philosophical squeegee and squeeze all the bullshit out of what your reaction is going to be and get to the bottom line, which is my reaction going to make this circumstance more reasonable and sensible, or is it just going to make it messier and less controllable? Am I feeding the fire, or am I allowing the fire to suffocate? You know, that's what you want to do, is try to be a fire suffocator.
And the possibility of death as well, a human being can reach a state of inner peace. By the way, this is not...
Okay, so I mean, it's all talk, you know. And people can, you know, I can just sit here. I'm in inner peace. You know, I mean, people walk down the street. I mean, they pet cats. They, you know, bounce kids on their knee. And then they go out and murder somebody and fuck their dead corpse. I mean, you know, the fact that people can say I'm inner peace. I mean, wow, you can say it. Until I, you know, can feel your inner peace, I'm probably not going to believe it, really.
Not medical advice. It's philosophy. Also, a calm mind can act in a...
So, philosophy is medical. I mean, medicine is just an informed, you know, you collect facts and then you can make deductions about prognosis and possible mitigations. And philosophy is the same thing. You're just diagnosing the disease, the threats, and then you're trying to explain how, well, these threats can be mitigated with this action, you know, that, you know, you can prevent harm by preventing harmables. You know, if you reduce the number of eggs laid, you know, that kind of thing, you can reduce the number of victims, the number that have to be thrown out of a nest.
Logical and rational way, and probably makes better life choices, which might increase the chance of recovery. Stoic ethics consist of different values. I haven't discovered a solid formula which contains these values, like...
There you go. Okay, so yeah, so it's just a word, and frankly, the word can be, you know, it can be understood to be a very negative, selfish philosophy, a very short-sighted philosophy, rather than one, you know, where you're just playing the gladiator game, okay? And yes, there's some victory in making yourself into a great gladiator, but if you're not fighting in a good war, then you're just a menace, okay?
Some kind of Ten Commandments, but I did discover that Stoicism points to life in accordance with nature.
So again, that would be moronic. So right there, you know, you'd write, you know, so he of course draws the picture of nature. It isn't the picture of the baby elephant being eaten by the lions while it's still, you know, screaming, so to speak. You know, it's not showing the gazelle walking off with its guts actually, you know, dragging behind it. You know, this isn't nature. Nature isn't just this little greeny, little blue and green, la la la, obviously. So, I mean, obviously nature is horrific, and it's, you know, it's the worst kind of violence porn. You know, it's just so disgusting. It's the number of children molested and murdered is, you know, insane. You know, the proportions are crazy. 9,000 dead and molested children for one that gets to grow up and have a life in it with a picket fence kind of thing. You know, the number of winners to losers is just insane in terms of its disproportion. So it's the worst model to emulate. It's the worst model to say, let's do as good as nature. No, that's failure, not success. I mean, pretty obviously. Well, this might be a good time to take a pause, so I will. A little peaceful drawing. La 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 la. Alright, I'm back. Continuing.
Nature refers to the greater whole and our role in it as human beings.
So again, our role in it as humans is just this niche thing. You know, we've just become social animals. You know, we do genocide on our own kind and like all the other great apes and blah, 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 and territory wars We're just a bug doing a different kind of bug life, but, you know, every bug's different and it's living in a little niche and blah, 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 and it has to worry about the competition. And so we killed all the competition thousands of years ago, you know, wiped out the woolly mammoth and the saber-toothed tigers and whatever, you know, the smallpox, you know, do what we have to do to take the territory, blah, blah, blah. Not a great story.
Our innate potential, we have to act for the benefit of the whole. We should.
Well, the whole what? The nature doesn't act, the trees don't act in the benefit of the grass. The grass doesn't act in the benefit of the trees. Nothing, there's none of this symmetry and symbiotic relationships. They're all parasitic relationships. They're all, you know, tainted bargains that are made between things. And clearly the interests of some organisms are not the interest of other organisms. It's they're just being used as food.
We shouldn't act against the natural course of things, but embrace it. In opposition to what's...
I mean, just, you know, sorry, but that just is such a... Wow. You can't get away with that stinker in the middle of this. I mean, the video was okay until that stinker.
Some believe Stoics are not beings without emotion. They see emotion as a human characteristic that...
Yeah, well, again, you can't really see it. I would like it to be. I wish it was as simple as you just turn your emotions off, blah, blah, blah. But it ain't going to happen. You can only mitigate, okay, with controlling philosophy. You can only try to flood your brain with, oh, a negative thing's happening. Think of the positive. The positive, the negative will be over someday. This is all just a moment in life. All I have to do is survive it and everything will be okay. And I just don't react. You know, you can do all of that to kind of try to keep your body and your glands from doing all this, you know, crap to you. But that's all you can do is mitigate to some extent. You know, but you can't have anything called complete control. So, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, yes, we should fight for whatever control we can muster, though.
It can be trumped.
And why we? You're just saying your better self. You're just saying your better ideas. That's all. The you know, the layers of your intellect, the best layer, the smartest layer, should have a voice in saying, don't be an asshole, don't be an asshole. That's all.
By reason, because it's not the emotion itself that decides our mood, but the position we take towards that emotion.
Oh, so again, that's just stupid, right? How you react to your emotion, what emotion you have in reaction to your emotion. That's not the problem. We're designed to viscerally and quickly react, and we have to fight that design, okay, because we don't live in a world where bears are going to pop out and eat us and all that kind of stuff. We live in a world where you have to be more, you have to plan your events. You know, things happen and you know they're going to happen in advance, and so you have to prepare for them. We can know things about that next week will be here. Animals can't know all this stuff. We can know it.
This way,
we can plant crops that will collect 6 months later or even a year later.
Thinking is quite therapeutic because it doesn't only make you more aware of your emotions.
Okay, so let's say right there's another big problem. Thinking is therapeutic. Well, only if you have very fake notions of reality. So if reality is nature is green and blue and fluffy and happy with little butterflies and stuff, well, yeah, then thinking might be your best course of action. But if you have a tendency to recognize that you're in a terrible maze of bullshit, and you're in jeopardy all the time, well, then thinking might not be such a good idea, because thinking, will lead you to understand doom, you'll drown in that doom, you know, that you're really not going to win this battle, that your life is futile and all of that crap. So it's going to be very demotivating in some circumstances. So you have to be very careful in understanding that your obligations, your main, you have to have your primary objective. Yeah, it should be back. Cold. So this whole thing should be really stated as you're just trying to optimize your performance. So whether you call it stoicism or any kind of word, you're just really saying you want to be whatever ism you want to be, and you want to be an imperfectionism, you want to be goodism, productivism, efficientism, sufficiently efficient in your function. And so he's drew a line here, and so the line part just made me think of all you're really doing is kind of trying to point the vector of destiny for everything, okay, into the best optimum direction. So there's this idea of how everything is evolving on Earth, and you can influence, that future branch, which way it goes. And the idea is to have it go somewhere where there's less frowny faces versus smiley faces or whatever. You're trying to diminish the amount of negatives, so the harm in the world. Because when you fix a harm, it's the same as making a happy. Okay, so a negative. So you're trying to predict where there's the most, the least harm and the best happy. And I would argue that the best destiny is a place where there's neither one, that there's no harms and no happies. But that's the real winning place. That's where the tail on the donkey is. That's the target, is to get the world to that point where you've just eradicated this harm thing altogether. And yes, you gave away the little happy thing, but so what? Okay, you're not losing anything by giving that away. You're really not losing anything. It's not a negative to not have a positive. It's just not. Zero is a perfectly good number. Anyway, just throwing more context on. Hit the right button. This is the right one.
Options, but you can see them as sensations that come and go like the waves of the ocean.
Okay, well, yes, you can see them as mechanisms your body triggered. And some of it is really conditioned, okay? You're not going to, you can't just say, I think I will be homosexual today. Or I think, you're not going to be able to control it that way. You can't just talk your way into an emotional state entirely. Yes, you can make contributions. You can fuck with your autonomic systems, to some extent. You can, my pulse is high. I can regulate it by, I'll just try to have some, words that are not likely, puppy, that are likely to reduce whatever provoked, the stimulation. You can do something to mitigate. But you can't really control in any substantial way.
This way you won't get overwhelmed by them.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Just don't fall into the... And like I said, some of it we can see it happening, right? We can see ourselves just becoming reactive and angry, and that state should trigger the thought, anger is stupid. So like an alcoholic, we should just say, bar. I've had some good times in a bar. And then recognize, but I had some really bad effects of having the good time. So the hell with it. Yeah.
Modern Stoics focus themselves on a number of exercises to reach inner peace. Like
So I don't know if Stoics do that. So, I don't think Stoics have a whole pile of literature on Stoicism and how you do all this, inner peace Buddhism thing. So I don't think so.
The premeditatio malorum, or the negative visualization. Marcus Aurelius was confronted daily with all sorts of people who weren't very nice to deal with. By starting the day with a negative visualization, he mentally prepared himself for these confrontations. He told himself, "Today I shall be meeting with interference, ingratitude, insolence, disloyalty, ill will, and selfishness."
Right, so he's ready for it. He's recognizing, I can't react to these people. I have to, the only thing I can control is my reactions. I can't control theirs. But in a sense, I can control their actions by controlling my reactions, this kind of thing. It's all reactive. And you're just basically saying that, yes, my reaction is going to be to control my reaction. Yeah.
all of them due to the offender's ignorance of what is good or evil. A Stoic often reminds himself that life is temporary, which is...
Okay, so again, I don't think this is true in any way, you know. I just don't buy the argument that it has anything to do with being Stoic. That has to do with being retarded, okay? The fact that your life is temporary really has nothing to do with what you're doing here. You're in a timeshare kind of a deal. You know, you're making the future, blah, blah, blah. The things just as valuable as you will be living in that future. There's just no way to get around this idea that somehow I can poo in the stream, and because it's going downstream, it's out of my business. It's not my concern. Wrong attitude.
It's called memento mori. So he won't waste time on trivial things and that's my own twist, doesn't take life too serious either.
So that's his own twist, which isn't a very good twist, frankly. You can't undertake it too seriously. I mean, the fact is that there's serious jeopardy. There's serious doom. There's serious consequences. There's serious liabilities. And it's all really, really fucking serious. And we all take it too trivially. You know, even I am too trivial. So, I mean, because, yes, I'm a physical ass, selfish animal, and I waste a tremendous amount of time placating my needs, over the mission. I take way too many cigarette breaks, so to speak.
Another exercise is called the view from above, that makes us see ourselves from a cosmic point of view, so we realize how small and unimportant we
are. Right, and that's exactly the wrong attitude. It's you don't know, we have no idea how important you are and how much you've wasted and squandered your capacities and how many capacities you still have left and all of that kind of crap. There's all kinds of opportunities to take a shot and hit the target. And, pretending it's not your job is just bullshit. It's all of our jobs to save the future.
We are compared to the vastness of the universe. That indifference is a power the Stoics know very well. Life is short, and that's why it's important to point...
So again, and this has nothing, and there's no evidence that any of this Stoicism will make you ultimately happier or... that it'll even get you the reward of living longer, because as pointed out before, luck is going to have a lot to do with it. So all of this crapola, so you've diminished and you've sacrificed the future by saying I'm not even going to bother contemplating that big picture because I'm going to stay focused on my little picture bullshit. You're not going to guarantee that that's going to do you any good either, that you might be much better off being the hero, because the hero survives and the hero thrives, being the sucker who just stayed behind and got blown up by the mortar or something, you know what I mean, the guy who said let's go get him and he left the trench, and then the trench gets blown up 5 minutes later. So if he would have been a trench sitter, he was slated for doom. So, I mean, it could work to your advantage as an individual to have higher ambitions.
Our life energy towards essential and important things and leave unimportant things.
So, again, everything's essential and important. So, again, there's no such thing as an unimportant thing. So, it just doesn't mean anything.
B. Especially in the current age, Stoicism can be a valuable instrument to give our lives guidance, so we don't drown in a sea of stimuli and distractions.
Okay, and that's all very well and good. It's all just basically, so let's all be beautiful. Yes, let's all be beautiful. Well, there's no definition of that. There's no, there's no way to do any of this. This isn't a practical strategy to, implement. So if you take anything from it, the thing to take from it is just, it's better to think about what you're going to do than not think about it. I mean, that would be the piece of advice is that everything is probabilistic, and measure your possibilities and your probabilities based on the absolute biggest picture. And the biggest picture says it doesn't matter who wins the gold medal. Is somebody's going to have a great day. It doesn't matter whether you have a great day or he has a great day or she has. It doesn't matter who has the great day. There's going to be a great day. I mean, it does matter, okay? But some people will squander the great day, you know. So, you know, but the fact is that there's somebody who needs it more, you know, or can make more out of it, can do more with it. Some people are good at machine gunning. Some people are good at, you know, sniper shooting long distances. Some, you know, we have to suit ourselves to our best function and try to find that niche. So anyway, so 2 million views, you know, poof, a lot of views. Yeah. Oh, a pinned comment. Check out whatever the book, Stoicism for Inner Peace. Okay, so he's big on this. This was a big subject. So he has migrated to making, you know, kind of negative, anti-natalist type content, which is good, I suppose. Let's see. Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to truly test a man's character, give him power. Yeah, well, that's sort of the trick of it, you know, because it's, you're going to have to do that. Oh yeah, it's not about what's in for me, you know, it's about what's in it for the people who are going to be ruined by it, you know. And I mean, Lincoln had to make one hell of a decision, right? I mean, the Civil War, fuck. You know, shit, not easy. So anyway, all right, well, maybe we'll play one of the other videos just to see where it goes a little bit. So that was that's the first video on the channel. Who knows, maybe the channel had some, I mean, maybe it had popularity because it made some other kind of videos that aren't on the channel anymore. I don't know. But it's kind of weird. The first video has 2 million views. The first listed video. So anyway, all right, so I'll do that and I'll find another video. All right, so we're back to the channel. So he's still pushing this Stoicism videos also. But let's do the video. This one has the word antinatalism in it, so we'll watch this one.
At Aspen Dental, we're a different kind of dentistry, where new patients get a complete exam and x-rays.
All right, so he starts by saying, is it better to never have been? Okay.
Some people believe it would indeed be better if no sentient life came into existence. And
yes, that would be, it'd be logical to recognize that Mars is doing fine. It has no, there's no screaming, okay? There's no victims who had to pay a price for existing. There's no worst case scenario.
Antinatalism is the philosophical viewpoint that procreation is morally wrong, and therefore we...
It's not a moral decision, it's a ethical circumstance, and that there's nothing ethically endorsable or decency-friendly or nice-friendly or good about imposing life. Because you have no guarantee that you aren't imposing horrible, awful torture. So it's a terrible risk to take with something's welfare. It's unethical because you don't have a good reason to do it. You have no prospect of a guaranteed profit, and you're risking that the loss will be paid by somebody else.
We should avoid it. Some antinatalists think only humans should stop having children.
Yes, which is kind of stupid. So it's funny thing if this was actually an Ephelist video. So funny. Yeah. Obviously some people are just human haters. Okay, they think, oh yeah, everything'll be just fine if we get rid of the buildings and the concrete and the asphalt and we just have a bunch of animals ripping each other's guts out. That'll be great. Too stupid.
Others believe that all sentient beings would be better off if they would never existed.
So, these guys only have a mustache, you know, but it's not a Hitler mustache entirely. And this is some sort of monster, some purple monster. Oh, hilarious.
But isn't it wrong to oppose the birth of children? Why would anybody be against the creation of new life?
There's lots of good reasons, and I don't, you know, the fact is that I think, even my generation, I mean, some number, 3 out of 10 of the people born never really thought having kids was some sort of, oh, I can't wait. No, they could wait. You know, they could wait for like ever. Like, they never thought it was a good idea. Why would I want one? What am I going to do with it? What the fuck is it? What's the purpose of it? So, I mean, you know, for some people, it's cultural, you know, and it's Social Security and all this kind of crap. They want somebody to take care of them. When I don't want somebody to do that. I don't want a slave. You know, I don't want something. And then, like I said, I mean, what you're after in life. I really, you know, I it's like a glorified puppy or something. You know, I know the difference between a pet, all right, and a person. So you don't have a person to fill the role of a pet.
One of today's most well-known anti-natalist philosophers is David Benatar. He wrote several books, including Better Not to Have Been, in which...
So he wrote one book on the subject, and then he wrote some counter-arguments to some counter-arguments. But, you know, he made sort of imply that he's researched the subject in many volumes, and he really hasn't. And the argument is pretty much basic in terms of he's making a analytical argument that you have nothing to gain because harm, the absence of a good is not prison. It's not a bad, okay? But the absence of a bad is always a good. Getting out of prison's always a good thing, all right? But you're not put in prison if you don't get out of prison, so to speak, okay? You don't need anything else but getting things out of cages. There is no other good except uncaging. Getting rid of the negative is the positive.
She explains his anti-natalist ideas in detail. Benatar argues...
Well, it's good that he's doing this commercial for the book, so excellent. You know, 161,000 views, great.
That coming into existence is always a serious harm, and thus
it's always a serious risk. So, you know, you come into existence for a millisecond, you know what I mean? You could be born and drop dead. So, I mean, it's, you know, it could be harmless in some respects. At what conscious level it's, you know, harm can even be imposed is another question.
Always wrong to bring new sentient life into existence. Therefore, preventing procreation is the best thing we can...
It's always irrational and selfish, and it can always be called something negative in terms of the poor thought process that had to go into the idea of doing it. It's not going to be logically sound act, because the prospect is that you're just inviting disaster. You're forcing a kid to walk a tightrope for no reason. There's no reward on the other side of the tightrope. You're not going to win anything, and all you're doing is risking the knives below that it can fall on.
...can do for our potential children, as those who haven't come into existence are free from the suffering of life. So his antinatalist position doesn't come from a hatred.
Yeah, so it comes from the position of, yeah, well, all the other planets are doing just fine without... you know, cancer statistics, you know, they're doing fine without lizards, you know, hunting out some victim to chomp.
It's of sentient beings. It comes from compassion because it seeks to prevent the inescapable suffering which results from being born.
Right, and so you're mostly showing humans suffering instead of what you're arguing, and Benatar also says in his book, okay, he doesn't really say it much, but everything he says applies to animals as well. This is some sort of face surgery. Yeah, it looks like a face there. It's an old face.
Antinatalism is a controversial topic that clashes with the worldviews of many. The masses probably oppose the idea of antinatalism, considering it...
Okay, so the masses I don't think really do, in the sense that I think the statistics sort of bear out that a lot of people take having kids rather seriously. Now, how many people would have a negative opinion of nature in general? You know, maybe it's only 2 out of 10 or 1 out of 10 or something like that. You know, who see it as, you know, tooth and claw, bloody, blah, blah, blah.
Misanthropic. After all, isn't ending sentient life as a whole to eradicate suffering a tad extreme? This fit.
It's the best solution, and the only thing that scream about it is the fact that it conflicts with our motivational system. The fact that we are designed by nature to be push, to fight through, to struggle. We're designed to be quicksand swimmers. All right, and to say, oh, we shouldn't swim in quicksand, yeah, it doesn't seem to make any sense to us because we have fins and we have all these tools for swimming in the quicksand. So it seems wrong on that level, but you give it a little bit of thought and you can figure out, oh, that's only because we're designed to be, you know, we're designed to endeavor to persevere, okay? But yeah, it's not really a great strategy.
Leo explores the philosophical position of antinatalism. Please note, this essay is a mere exploration, not an endorsement.
Well, that's kind of pussy. So, you know, so whatever that even, you know, it's an exploration and not an endorsement. I mean, I don't know how, it's a value-laden subject. So if you're not going to take a position on the values, then I don't, you know, it seems kind of silly. You either think nature's this, you know, or you understand that, no, it's huge attrition, that there's really a bunch of babies being murdered all the time. It's a baby killer.
If we look at life, we can conclude that we experience both good and bad, both pleasure.
And the good is, generally speaking, the eradication of the bad. You get rid of your poverty, you have your better life, blah, blah, blah. So it's really prevention of disease, then you feel good. You know, it's just the idea of preventing or escaping the negatives is the positives.
Pleasure and pain. And thus, we could argue that life is worth living when the good outweighs the bad. But when the bad outweighs the good, life is not worth living. However, from an antinatalist point of view, the bad always outweighs the good, no matter how you look at it.
It doesn't, no matter how you look at it. But it's certainly how you look at it is important, because it's a big difference between me assigning a risk to myself, okay, for my ambition. I have some ambition and I'm willing to have my foot cut off to be a millionaire or something. It's another thing for me to cut somebody else's foot off to be a millionaire. So who's experiencing the good and the bad? It's one thing for me to talk about how good it feels, okay, to have, you know, my fancy tea served in my luxury house. But if it was built by slaves, you know, that's bullshit. So it depends on recognizing that anything good you're experiencing, even the air you're breathing, was exceedingly expensive, and that a whole bunch of organism had to die and be fertilizer for your atmosphere. Even the air you're breathing is expensive. And there's slaves who are paying the price for it. So as long as you understand the world is so unfair and so uncontrolled that everything you are exploiting for your comfort comes at some price, somebody else is paying. They're the slaves, they're the victims, they're in the sex trade, they're in this, they're in that, they got this, they got that. You know, they're paying the price. Big difference for you to assign risk to yourself and say, I'm willing to jump off the cliff and get beaten up and hit by rocks and all this stuff. It's another thing to throw somebody else down and say, I'll accept their pain, okay, and I'll take the profit.
Thus, even when we consider our lives good and pleasant, not being born at all is always preferable to being alive. According to Dave,
it's preferable just in logically. It's so you've eradicated all of these obvious negatives, by making them into positives, okay, opening all the cells, and you haven't lost anything because there's nothing to lose. Once you've prevented torture and harm and suffering, you're already in the winning circle. And anything you had to sacrifice can't mean anything because you've already won. You won. Okay, so there's nothing you can lose. It's not a negative. You can't convert the positives into negatives. You can't say that not having $1 million, okay, is a negative thing. It's not having $1 million is a negative thing. Yeah, it's not a negative. It's not prison.
David Benatar, coming into existence generates good and bad experiences, or pain and pleasure. If we experience pain, it hurts, and we suffer as a consequence of it. If we experience pleasure, we feel joy. As the Buddhists would say, life consists...
I understand, but we're psychologies, and we don't make rational choices. So you have to understand that our ambition, okay, is an addiction. And that the addiction biases our opinion. I didn't smoke cigarettes for 50 years because I thought they were good. Okay, or because I thought this was a good deal I was making. I knew it was a bad deal, and it didn't matter, because I was going to endure whatever the price was because I'm an addict. Not because I have a rational perception of value, it's because I had an irrational perception of value. A physical addiction. So our emotional addictions and our habits and all of these things are obstacles to us behaving rationally. And procreation, or the opinion of a procreation, right? This isn't really so much about actually procreating, because we know most people do that recklessly and sloppily. This is about having some rhetoric where you preach that it's a good idea for people to recklessly have kids. And it's obviously not a good idea. And the more you analyze every decision to have a kid, you can find huge flaws in the logic being applied to any purpose they think they're accomplishing. And if they think they're going to have, well, I'm going to have a kid because he's going to be Superman, he's going to save the day. Well, that would be irrational, right?
Of 8 worldly winds, praise and blame, gain and loss, success and failure, and joy and sorrow. When we bring a child into the world, this individual will inevitably be exposed to these winds. A positive, optimistic approach to this occurrence would be that a child now has an opportunity to undergo all the great things life offers.
Right, but there won't be any opportunity. There will just be a world that will affect it. Okay, it won't control anything. What clouds do, what the world does, what the weather does, everything else is going to control it. What country it's born in, what education it gets, what everything, all that's going to control it. So this isn't anything it's going to do. You're going to just place it in a stream, and frankly, in a lot of cases, it's quite predictable where the stream goes. It flows right to the sewage plant.
The individual may gain many pleasurable experiences and might even find sustainable meaning as a keystone of his existence. But do all these joys of life, like tasting good food and listening to beautiful music, make existence better than...
So he didn't connect those two subjects. The subject was optimism versus pessimism. He just looked at the optimistic view, didn't explore the pessimistic view, which is recognizing all the risk and saying, is there any reason to impose risk? What value am I really producing by accepting the risk of the worst case scenario? And is there enough value in that positive to say you could possibly justify imposing the worst case scenario? And I'm obviously arguing, of course not. Just as I would argue, it doesn't make any sense for me to go to Disneyland, okay, and torture somebody in the process, to pay the ticket out of somebody else's pain. to say, I accept you kicking him in the nuts so I can have a joy ride. No.
Non-existent. Do these experiences outweigh life's suffering? And even when a child's life turns out to be at least moderately pleasurable and even enjoyable, would it...
So, and whose life is that exactly? So all of these lives they propose that we should be living, where's the example of your big winner? Because frankly, I've seen every person who had moments of victory in their life, they all die of something, and it's all kind of horrible, and it's all kind of ugly, and it's all kind of the failure, the watching the mountain climber fall down the mountain inevitably. Okay, he gets to the peak and he's up there, and then he falls off the cliff and he tumbles down. Sorry, that movie is longer than the movie of him being on the peak of the mountain going, look how big and strong and powerful I am. The glory moments are tiny little events, and the rest of your life is, you know, the long, tedious gruel. You spend an awful long time on that trail of tears, you know, before you get to your paradise. And your paradise rots very quickly. The ice cream melts. Now, if you want to look at it, it just doesn't endure.
I'd still be better off not being born at all. According to Benatar, a child would have been better off if it never came into existence.
This idea, would you impose your life on somebody else? I mean, I wouldn't. And I've been really lucky. I was born in the right country, born at the right time, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. And yeah, no, I wouldn't impose it because it is full of shit. You know, and for what purpose?
Explains an asymmetry between the amount of pain and pleasure we experience when we exist and the absence of pain and pleasure when we don't exist. His book contains the following graph, showing us, due to this asymmetry,
the asymmetry is that it's not having a good is not a bad. Okay, but getting rid of a bad is always a good. Preventing a bad is always a good.
Advantage of non-existence over existence. When we exist, we experience pain, which is bad, and pleasure, which is good. However, when we don't exist, we don't experience pain, which is good, and we don't experience pleasure, which is not bad.
There you go, the simple concept of not bad, okay? Yeah, it's not bad, okay, not to have the $1 million. I mean, you know, it's not cancer, okay? All right, not having $1 million is not cancer, okay? So, I mean, that's the asymmetry. So, yes, it's that simple. Good, good, bad, not bad. No, it's not a good. I mean, it's not a, there's no negative to the absence of a positive. The absence of a positive does not make negative. The absence of a negative does mean positive. That's why it's called asymmetry, you know, because it doesn't work the same way going both ways. Might be a good point to end. Yeah, we're a minute and 12. It's kind of a long video. So yeah, we'll leave it at that. The asymmetry is a good argument. I call it the zero sum. Okay, that we're really always just start off in a negative condition. You're born in a negative condition. We live in a dungeon and we just spend the rest of our life trying to climb out and get a little bit of sunlight, a little bit of something. But yes, we'd be better off if we were never thrown in the dungeon, never given the need to satisfy in the first place. And that all we're doing is zero summing. We're just trying to get back to nothing. Trying to undo the negative condition imposed. And we just habitate to being in the negative condition and fighting for our little glimmers of comfort. And it's really quite pitiful that we're in this position. Sad that people don't recognize the position we're in. So anyway, so this video is, you know, quite good in terms of spelling out some of the issues, so not all bad. A little disconnected, like I said, it starts off by making this comparison between caring about all sentient life on Earth and caring just about the welfare of unhappy humans. And it should have better stated that this isn't, that even Benatar, again, he states in the first page of his book, everything I'm going to talk about, I'm just going to talk about humans, but everything I'm saying applies to the animal kingdom as well. So, I mean, he's an Ephelist, you know, as a fact, because the theory, the value theory, applies to all feeling things. All right. Yeah, so probably enough. So, till the next time and such. I mean, maybe we'll do some more of this. Maybe we'll play the rest of this video and another video and maybe play a couple of this guy's videos. But they're good talking points. And I suppose they would be good argument points, that people should be able to argue these points. But we'll see if we can find somebody to debate. Who can do so in some sort of stay on the subject manner. But anyway, till the next time, such and so forth, and whatnot. Yes, this has been a DoNotGod.com video production in the context of a world run by this evil company called Google. And it's quite horrible. Very poor decision the human race has made to let this slimy marketing company control access to information on the internet. Very poor decision.